You are listening to a special best of edition of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Bits and pieces of the interviews and special moments voted best of all time by our friends, family, and a guy we met down on the pier on Berth 76 at the Port Socal in San Pedro, California, overlooking the bustling Los Angeles Harbor through the soundproof windows of the palatial LA radio studio. I'm Phil Hewlett, and I thank you for listening. This is an old school talk show with a new school twist. The crew, as usual, consists of the lovely Jennifer Bjorklund.
We're not talking cupcakes either. No.
The irrepressible Jay Campadonia.
It makes me want to go hunting. I'm sorry, but I seriously want a shotgun at the moment.
And the youthful yet overly confident Carlos Isu.
Really?
By the way, we have a brand new Facebook page. Find us and like us at facebook.com/Phil Hewlett and Friends. Anytime you need to get a hold of us because you have an idea or a bone to pick with one of us, email us at feedback@philhewlettandfriends.com. Okay, let's start with something from our premiere episode. We called it Dating Dogs and a Good Rubdown. And there was a moment when we took some time out to talk amongst ourselves about some of the seemingly simple things in life that some people just can't do.
What? I can't touch my toes.
Yeah, and a guy in a wheelchair can't run, Phil. What are you talking about?
All right, well, touching the toes is one of those things. A lot of people, without bending their knees, cannot touch their toes.
I can't. That's one of the reasons I really need a massage, I think.
You seem like a yoga chick to me.
I know. Wouldn't you think I would be limber just because...
How often do you go? Yoga.
To what? Oh, yoga? I've never been to yoga.
Oh, you? Okay. Because you look like one of those,
I would be, yeah. Because I'm, you know, but I do work out. I just don't do yoga.
But can you shuffle cards?
I can do that.
Right.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah, I think we're all shufflers. Okay.
Sports guy better be able to shuffle cards.
Yeah, you better be able to.
A lot of people can't shuffle. Yeah, but can you shuffle the what amazes me is the poker guys who shuffle the poker chips.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's amazing. You can't help but keep your eyes stuck to it.
Yeah, it's hard.
And they do it without thinking about it because they're thinking about their hand.
I can shuffle cards and shuffle dance. Like, you know, every day I'm shuffling with LMFAO.
Shuffle dance.
No! I'm a multi-shuffler.
Really? I believe that.
Okay. A lot of people can't whistle.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't do the really loud one.
You can't whistle?
I cannot whistle.
Try.
And
well, you've got the biggest smile on the planet.
Oh, you cannot smile and whistle at the same time. And that's why I've never seen him.
Plus,
not
if
smile.
You can't close your lips around that smiling, set of choppers there, you know, then that's the deal. All right, curl their tongues. A lot of people can't do that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wait, curl it or like? I can do that.
That's a gene.
What's the thing that you can make it like a wave? Is that the same thing? Because I can't do that.
Oh, wow. See, Jennifer can do that. See, that's an additional. Yeah. That's like that's a mutant gene.
Yeah. Right, we're gonna have to move on because it's turning me on.
A lot of people can't roll their R's like
roll
the Hispanic name.
Like Armand, no, can't.
You can learn. That's learned. That you could learn. That.
You think so?
I think so.
A lot of people, they try to wink, but they blink, both eyes closed.
Mm, I can wink.
You can wink?
Can you wink both eyes?
Yeah. At the same time?
Yeah. Well, you kind of already are, like, all the time. That's
See, I'm used to that.
In the same episode, we got a quick lesson in dating, specifically how guys can become more confident and more successful with the ladies. And we heard from a guy who trains men for a living, and his name is Trip with two P's. Check it out.
Men don't know how to pursue a woman, and women don't know if the man is pursuing them. Those are the two biggest things.
I'm running. Is he chasing me?
Who's
I don't know.
Got problems with that? Hey, what's up, baby? I'm pursuing you. That's pretty much it.
Well, right. That's you. You're,
but then what
you're
if,
not the
what
guy
if,
that needs help.
What if you're the guy that always ends up in the friend zone? You know? What? I mean, that's like the worst place to be. It's like you're
besides
such
the
a
creep
good
zone,
friend.
That's like the worst right there.
Right?
There's creep zone and there's friend zone.
I love it.
Yeah.
Both pretty bad. It. Creepy is worse. But the friend zone is a common problem that most of my clients come to me because they always get in the friend zone. They never know how to flirt with a girl. And so the girl doesn't take them seriously as a potential mate and then says, you're my friend. It's over.
Right. And it is because you don't want to lose that friend if something goes wrong or weird. in a relationship.
Right.
Yeah.
The girl says, you know what? I don't see this guy as sexual anymore, but he's such a good listener. So they keep him around.
So is that the biggest mistake a guy makes?
To be put in the friend zone?
Yeah.
Who listens too much? That's check.
Probably one of them. Well, listening is great. You can listen, but if you're not stating your intentions or letting a girl know that you're actually interested in them, not just to hear their issues and problems and just be the soundboard, well, then there's going to be some issues, right?
So you got to put the moves on early, and then but the problem is if my theory is, if you're a guy that ends up in the friend zone, she was never going to be attracted to you in the first place.
Yep.
It's chemistry.
A lot of people say that. I disagree, because I've actually heard stories from the woman's end who say, you know, I don't know what happened there. He never pursued me. I was always they get in this confused state where they're like, does he like me? Does he not like me? And it takes too long where the guy doesn't do anything. And they're like, you know what? I just see him as a friend now. You know, right. I just see him as a friend, because it's hard to see someone as sexual, at least from the woman's point of view, when you've been their friend so long. Where a guy can be like, I'll have sex with you at any second.
Oh, yeah.
So what I tell guys when they come to me and they say, I have a fear of rejection, I say, well, then that means we have to go and get you out and get rejected as many times as possible.
Get over that fear, right? Wow.
To get over that fear.
I almost spit my water. I'm sorry. That's fantastic.
But there are layers or levels of rejection. It starts with, leave me alone, you idiot, to, you know, a slap in the face. So how you talk about getting out of the comfort zone. Do you get the guys to say things way beyond what they might ever consider, I mean, even borderline rude, to where you get them slapped a couple of times so they experience that?
Well, no, because it's funny is that so many men fear rejection. Why? Because they've never been rejected before. They've never put themselves out there. So my goal is to let them know that rejection is never as bad as you think it's going to be. So men think they're going to get slapped in the face. Men think they're going to be called an idiot, or a girl's going to swear at them or whatever. And I take them out, or I tell them to go out more and try to get rejected, and they find that it's never that bad.
It's like learning the hot corner in baseball, you know, where you catch the line drive with your chest or your chin a couple of times, and then you get over that, and eventually you just start catching it with your mitt.
There you go.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Baseball analogy. What?
Yeah, right. Or, you know, like a hockey goalie. You know, that 500 pucks to the face mask, and eventually you're not afraid of the puck.
You know, it's funny. I always use dating analogies to explain things to people. So
do you really?
Yeah.
That's the difference between men and women right there.
That was just a taste of the conversation we had with Trip. Hear the whole thing in episode 1. Again, it's called Dating Dogs and a Good Rubdown. Click on the latest episodes tab on our website, philhewlettandfriends.com. And while you're there, you'll find a link to Trip's advice website on our links page. And by the way, in that episode, you'll hear all about the art of massage. Yep, we ask every question. And two of the world's renowned dog obedience trainers show up to give us treats. Oh, and they give us some insight into what our dogs are thinking. We love our theme song, don't you? It's composed and all the instruments are performed by Russ Monzen. He's an airline pilot, and before that he flew for the Navy, and all the while he wanted to be in a rock and roll band. And it's never too late, right? Well, maybe we'll put some of his stuff up on iTunes one of these days. Okay, jumping to episode 2, Lobster Fest. One of the biggest lobster festivals in the world happens right in the Ports au Call here in the L.A. Harbor, where we do our podcast. So we had the promoter of the festival on the air. We had a restaurant menu planner on to talk about the hundreds of ways you can prepare those tasty crustaceans. But then we spoke with a professor from the University of New Hampshire. He specializes in lobster, learning about them, their habitat, their mating habits. You'd think he'd have a soft spot in his heart for them, right? Well, here's what Professor Wynn Watson had to say when I asked him if he ever enjoys a plate of delicious lobster.
One thing I have to appreciate about lobsters, I study horseshoe crabs, I study sea slugs, I study fish, I study a lot of animals. I do have a special place in my heart for all of them, but lobsters are jerks.
You've been bitten too, right? You bite back.
Yeah, they will eat each other.
Really?
Oh.
They're not a friendly species.
So so much for the social thing.
Right.
Oh, they're social.
They are, but, you know, they're I don't feel bad about eating lobster.
This is like Game of Thrones.
Right. I mean, I would feel bad about killing a horseshoe crab. They're very gentle. I feel bad about killing a sea slug. They're gentle. You know, only but lobsters I don't feel too bad about. And I absolutely love them. There's nothing like eating lobster on a boat and just tossing the shells overboard, you know. It's, lobsters are fantastic.
Ah, yes, honesty in academia. That's the best, right? Get a link to Dr. Watson's lobster website on the links page, philhewlettandfriends.com. And hey, did you know you can listen live to the podcast each week? Well, except this week. That's right. Just come to the homepage at philhewlettandfriends.com, and the streaming player will be right there, ready for you to listen live, chat with other listeners, or with our intern, or you don't have to chat, just listen and enjoy the show. Okay, we had a guest visit the studio. She's from Sweden. You'll notice the accent, but she practices her particular skill in Southern California in the trendy, ritzy Newport Beach area. Anna Karin Bjorklund, no relation to Jennifer, interprets dreams. She walks into the studio and sits right down next to Jay, and the magic begins.
Hi.
Hello there. Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
Hi, Jennifer.
She called you Yen. Did you like that, Jennifer?
Yeah, I do. That's my nickname. That's
my Swedish pronunciation of the J.
Yes, I like that. So you've got
that's exactly it.
The Swedish accent and the whole thing.
Yay, calm down. Yay.
I can't. Well, Jay's having a good time because, and compliment to you, Anna Karin. Very good looking, nice Swedish lady here in the studio.
Forgive me, but a little American line on you. You are smoking.
Wow, that's a great way to start this off.
Yeah, just letting you know.
There you go. Now, easy. We got a program to do
all right,
here.
All right.
Okay, so tell us, why do we dream?
Yeah, well, there's a few different reasons for sure. The way I look at dreams is that we have dreams to help us process different emotions that are going through our daily life. But we also have dreams that help guide us, so more of intuitive nature. So it's important to look at both aspects of dreams. So when we have a dream, look at it and see, how does this dream relate to my life right now? Is there some feelings or themes in the dream that may also be going on in my life right now? Doesn't necessarily have to mean that you're being chased by a tiger in real life, but is it something that kind of reminds you of that feeling? Something you don't really want to face up to?
But well, see, I'm not trained to come to the proper conclusion on any of that, right?
Yeah, am exactly.
I mean, I could come up with any number of, well, that means I'm going to get rich today.
Yeah. I had a dream that I won the lottery. Woohoo!
Yay, yeah. I love those dreams.
But that's not what they mean, though, is it?
Well, I mean, yes, they could. You could be one of those lucky people who have a premonition dream and you actually will win the lottery.
Yeah, but I mean, what is that, 1 out of 1% of the population?
Possibly. But more importantly, if you're having a dream like that, capture that willing feeling. If you wake up and feel like, oh, wow, I dreamt I won the lottery. If you're able to capture that feeling that you just had in the dream, imagine the possibilities of attracting that kind of energy flow.
So a self-fulfilling prophecy sort of thing? Is that what you're
talking about? Yeah, so even if it's not winning the lottery, it might symbolize that you're actually feeling pretty good about yourself right now. And if you're feeling good about yourself, most likely you're going to attract even more good things.
Okay, and so what are some of the most common dreams that people have?
Well, a most common dream that I heard of in most studies is being chased.
Yes,
something.
I have that all the time. I'm being chased, and I have to, and I go through 5 or 6 or 7 scenarios as to when I have that moment of truth where I'm faced off with, and I have no place to go. I'm backed up against the wall. How I'm going to fight my way out of that and survive.
Yeah. So what I would do if I have a chasing dream is to look at, why am I having it right now? Has something happened in my life in the past few days? That I, you know, dreams can be subjective or objective.
But I have those dreams all the time.
Yeah.
I have a couple every month.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
So why? Why?
Do you owe people money?
Yes, I do.
So let's say, Phil, they're subjective, and that means that there's actually something within you that you may not be comfortable being aware about, or you might just not want to face. Maybe some.
What are you insecure about there, big guy?
I don't know. I usually feel pretty good about things, other than I'm always concerned about the future. future and as the provider in the house. You know, that everything's going to be okay for the family. You know, and I'm constantly, that's my focus in life, I think.
Yeah. So there might be some aspects like that, but it could also be some kind of objective dream where it's actually something, let's say someone here on the radio show that you may not want to face up to. Or
come on, Spill.
She totally looked right at me.
Here, right?
That's why we sent Jennifer to Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah.
So there's always something going on. But it's interesting that they've done so many studies, and these kind of dreams are dreamt all around the globe. And different countries will have different characters chasing them. So, for example, in Canada, they have bears most often, maybe also in Sweden.
Right.
Whereas in India, they might have more tigers. And so it's all relevant to the culture.
Yes, like in Scandinavia, maybe trolls are chasing you, right?
Yeah, maybe trolls. Right.
So, okay, this is going to be my only one question because I was recently freaked out about that, so I'm actually glad that you're here.
Okay.
I woke up and I was like, okay, this is not good. I actually had an intimate dream with a not so attractive coworker.
Okay.
I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. That to me, like, I woke up and I'm going, what the heck was I thinking? What am I doing? I wouldn't do that in a million years.
Well, those kind of dreams, can we call them sex dreams or what do we call
them?
Sure,
why not? They're sex dreams.
Yeah. Okay. So often when we're having those kind of dreams, it could benefit from doing something with her. No, it doesn't necessarily have to have.
If you saw this woman, no way.
No.
No.
I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about doing like a project together, developing something.
Oh.
So is there somehow that you could benefit from working together on something?
Well, that's a different way of looking at things.
So are there some aspects of her that you could benefit from taking on and integrate within yourself?
Yeah. Not that you would ever consider some other form of partnership. Is that
right?
It?
Yeah. Because right? I like woke up and it blew my mind. I go, I must have ate something. I must have had too much to drink the night before. Like I had no idea where that came from. But that makes sense.
Yeah. So they're kind of fun to think about like that.
Yep. All right. I think everybody has flying dreams.
Oh,
and everybody flies differently. You know how I fly?
No.
I kick my feet.
Ooh.
Like you're swimming?
Like I'm swimming. Only it's like the frog kick, you know? It's not the regular kick. It's like the jackknife kick.
That's the way.
Are you physically doing it too while you're dreaming?
Well, I don't know. I haven't had any video run on me, and my wife hasn't told me one way or the other, but I do that kick. And I get more and more altitude as I do the kick, and then I could just soar.
Yeah.
But I could always fly around. But everybody has flying dreams,
that's
right?
That's cute, Phil.
Well, I mean, at some point in their lives.
But what does it mean?
But flying dreams are great. So if you're having them, it's joy and treasure.
Sure.
Often when you have them, something is going really good in your life. And you kind of, and also from a more spiritual perspective, you're actually elevating yourself. You're seeing a situation from a higher altitude. Right, so you have a new perception on things. So it's a generally an all good dream, unless of course you're about to crash. So it all depends on how you're feeling when you're flying around.
I woke up when I smashed into a building.
Yeah,
I'm glad you mentioned spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
Last week I had a very detailed spiritual, I guess, dream, and I don't know how it started, but I found my cousins and I playing in a junkyard. And we were trying to get out. We saw a fence that was locked and it was gated until I saw my cousin, who actually recently passed away, on the other side.
Mm.
So these spirit dreams. Last week was actually his birthday, so I was really happy to have that dream. What should I take out of that?
Oh, wow.
How do spirits get involved with dreams?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm a very strong believer of astral dreams. So I do think there are certain dreams that are a little bit different in nature. And they just kind of
astral
feel
astral dreams?
Yeah, I call them astral dreams. It's my definition of them.
Okay.
And they just feel a little different. So sometimes you might dream about a person that has passed over, but it feels kind of like ordinary. But some dreams, however, when you feel and meet them, you just know that they are there. They have come through to say hi to you. And it just feels, it's a very, very warm and special feeling. So pay attention to what's going on. How did he manage to get into your dream like that? And why is the fence there? And why are your friends there? And the gate? And so all symbols in dreams are chosen for a reason. They are there to portray a story. So it might be something he's trying to communicate to you as well.
So do you recommend like waking up? Because I tend to, as soon as the alarm goes off, I'm like in work mode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like in the shower, in the clothes, out, coffee, breakfast.
Yeah.
like, do you recommend writing something down?
Oh, yeah.
And maybe visiting it later where you're more in that kind of state? Mm-hmm. I mean, is there tips?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you want to remember them, definitely write them down as soon as you wake up. Because otherwise, if you're like me and most people, they're going to fly away and they're not going to come back unless it was like a really strong dream and it might get triggered by something later on. But otherwise, if you don't write it down immediately, it's going to be really hard to capture it later on.
Here's a dream that radio people have.
I'm sorry. There's a lot more to that dream interview, and if you want to hear it all, it's on episode 3, which incidentally features Jennifer patching to us from Martha's Vineyard. In fact, she's in a vacation home, and her wonderful mother is there listening to us as we all recount near-death experiences. Listen to what happens when Jennifer's mom doesn't remember things quite the way Jennifer does. Jennifer, how about you?
I'm sitting here looking at my mother. I'm looking at my mother through the window, and I just remembered mine.
Really? What happened?
Do you remember this, Mom? She's nodding her head in there. We were out to dinner and coming around a corner on the way home, and the door went flying open because I was leaning against it, and I went flying out the car.
Wow. You actually rolled, like, out of the car?
And the woman in the back seat with me. No, I could see the pavement flying by, and the woman sitting in the back seat with me grabbed me by the leg.
And just before your face scraped the pavement, right? So you...
And she's... Yeah, my mom's shaking her head. She's like, that never happened.
Everyone on the show nearly died at least once. And you can hear all of the stories along with the Dreams Lady and the Goddess of Destiny. Lisa Osborne paid a visit as well, told each of us what the cards had to say about that signpost up ahead, to steal a phrase. Hear it all in episode 3 from September 20th, 2013. It's called Dreams, Destiny, and Death. Next up, from our September 26th show, Hockey, Pit Bulls, and In-Laws, the controversial story of a little girl from Southern California with autism who relies on her service dog, who just happens to be a pit bull. The family was recently asked to leave a restaurant because the establishment didn't feel comfortable with that breed of dog around. Is it pit bull discrimination? Give a listen to a snippet of our conversation with the little girl's father.
It was Saturday, and family and I had stopped over at Tom's Farms. We visit quite a bit.
Tom's Farms, what is that? Where is it?
Tom's Farms is a small tourist attraction. It has there's little rides, petting zoo. They have shops, a lot of shops, a lot of eateries. There's a fruit grocery store, candy store, all that good stuff.
It's in Southern California?
Correct. It is California. It's in Corona, California.
Okay, so you go in there, and what happens?
We walked in there. We had Absidy and her service dog, and we're walking through, and we had a little weird look, you know, a few weird looks from people. There's like, so we just assumed, okay, you know, we have a pit bull. We're walking through, and we got stopped by security, and they came and said, "Oh, I'm sorry, we can't have that breed." And then my wife showed her badge and said, we have she's a service dog. And they didn't really, the first guy that approached us wasn't really sure. And then he looked at the badge and then he wasn't sure how to read it. And then said, okay, you guys are fine. And so we went to the candy store, went to walk around. We were in the candy store for about 10, 15 minutes. And all of a sudden, a lady walked up to us. Apparently she worked at the store, and she said, she said to us, "You can't have that in here. You have to leave." And she's pointing at the dog. My wife once again shows the badge that she's a service dog, and she goes, "No, you can't have that." And so my wife didn't understand, and she goes, "Oh well, she's a service dog. You know, if there's a problem, you know, feel free to call the police." And she says, "I'm calling the store manager, or I'm calling the general manager, in fact." And so we just went about our way, walking through the store, and we were about to buy a few items. And security walked in, and they had told us that they had received a call that there was a commotion. And we were saying, what was the commotion? Because it was calm and quiet. And then he pointed at our dog. He said, "Oh, they said that, you know, you guys were causing a commotion in the store." He goes, "No. I mean, if you look around, everybody's walking right by us. There's no problem." As we were having this conversation, there were families. There were kids walking right by us. You know, and Cupcake was laying on the ground. No problems. And security gets on the phone, talks to the general manager, had a few words, and general manager decided it was, you know, he didn't want to lose a paying customer, allowed us to stay. And then so we were about to finish our order, and then my wife asked, he goes, hey, you know, this isn't right. You know, we'd like to talk to the general manager and receive an apology from the general manager and from the lady that approached us, which we found out was the actual store manager. And for some reason, the store manager happened to go on a break right at that minute. And the store manager was nowhere to be found at that moment.
So Ed, were you allowed to stay, or did they insist that they force you to leave?
He allowed us to finish our shopping at that time, but we were told to leave.
So, first of all, this is illegal. If this is a service dog with documentation, it's illegal to ask you to leave an establishment, even if it's a food establishment that doesn't allow animals, because it's technically a service dog. Second of all, you can't be breedist when you're deciding what service dog you're going to allow. I mean, that just seems wrong.
You're right. It is very wrong, and we refused to leave. There was no reason for us to leave, you know. But the way we were approached, the lady was yelling at us, you know, and we just went about our business, you know. And it was a very, you know, simple fact. It's a service dog, and you know, despite what the breed is, once a dog becomes a service dog, that breed no longer is seen.
Yeah, it sounds like she was the one that was causing the commotion.
Yes. Yes, she was.
Tell us a little more about your daughter. I think you mentioned her name real quick. Tell us again what her name is. And also, tell us about her and the dog and the relationship and how the dog is trained. Because we're talking about a service dog and about a badge and all that sort of thing. And I'm not sure a lot of people are really up to speed on what all of that means. And couch it around the relationship that your daughter has. And how old is she, especially?
Our daughter's 6. Her name is Absidy. It is spelled A-B-C-D-E. And she has a very unique name. At 18 months old, she was diagnosed with autism. She's high-functioning. She did not speak until she was about three years old. We started off, my wife, she's the one that did all the work, research, everything on autism. And basically, she has self-injurious. She has self-injurious tendencies, sensory deprivation disorder. She goes through a lot of the issues that goes along with autism. We were referred by different people where to go, what to do, who to speak to, and it was very overwhelming. And we had we were approached about getting a service animal, and this was all new to us.
So how is she helped by the service dog?
Through the service dog, it's through sensory deprivation resolution. It's the independence that she has. She's able to walk freely and go around. She is attached to the dog.
I see. Did you have any qualms about the service dog being a pit bull with a small daughter like that? Did you have any preconceived notions about a dog like that?
In the very, very beginning, because I was not around the American Pit Bull Terrier breed, just like a lot of other people, in the beginning, yes, until mm-hmm. I started going around and being around pit bulls, and I started to realize I don't see what the problem is that everybody has. It's not the breed. It's the notion that everybody has built in their mind based on stereotypes. And it's all about negative aspects based on the dog. It's all based on the owners, not the dogs. It's the visuals and everything that's shown to you that gives all the negativity. You know, we did a lot of heavy research, and I mean, in fact, when we first went to our first trainer's place, she had a massive pit bull named Louie. I literally pissed in my pants. I walked into the house and. I mean, it was the best dog in the world. It was amazing. And I was so amazed how she had raised all of her kids around pit bulls, you know, and everybody has all these notions about with bad dogs. It's all because they come from bad owners.
When you take Absidy around and you have the pit bull there, the Pupcake is her name.
Correct.
And when you go around, do you run into issues with people everywhere you go?
Yes, on a daily basis. A lot of it is either it's funny because it's one or the other. Either people love pit bulls and they totally disregard that it's a service animal and they just want to tell us how they love pit bulls and they have a, you know, they have dogs, they have this, and they want to just play with dogs, which they're not supposed to. Right. And or they're afraid to death. And then they literally tell their kids, don't go there, he'll kill you. And they will literally run out of the way. And when you see a dog with a vest who's walking very calmly and next to a girl who's walking in different directions, she wants to go here, she wants to go there, and they're attached together, how can you be afraid of a dog like this? It's a service animal.
Right. And also those people that do want to overcompensate by showing you, oh no, I love pit bulls, let me pet your service dog. That's a big no-no too. I know a lot of people make that mistake because service dogs are just so, they're so docile. They're so sweet.
Well, you have the face-to-face reaction from people when you're going around town, but your story of what happened at Tom's Farms has appeared in the press. It's appeared online. And there's been a reaction. You've heard, no doubt, some support, but you've probably gotten just the opposite in there, and it's been kind of ugly in some cases, hasn't it?
It was very overwhelming. The amount of support we received online was incredible. We didn't expect this. My wife had written a letter. We sent it in on Facebook. We messaged Tom's Farms. No response. Resent the letter, and they said, "Oh, we'll have somebody get back to you." Waited another week and a half. No response. Sent it back again. "Oh, we'll have management get back to you." And I was, okay, this is ridiculous. You know, how do you ignore something like this?
Find out what happened next by listening to our fourth episode. And just a reminder, not only can you find the latest episodes of Phil Hewlett and Friends at our website, you can also see them and leave your comments at our official Facebook page, facebook.com/Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'll be back in a moment with the whole crew and more of the best of Phil Hewlett and Friends.
Energize,
the Lon Friend podcast. This is my midlife. This is the latest incarnation of my media endeavors. All I care about is listening to music and telling fans about their heroes.
Energize, the Lon Friend podcast, available at aircheck.us or visit the show's Facebook page at facebook.com. Energize, the Lon Friend podcast.
Hey, you can hear this program, this podcast, on Stitcher Radio On Demand. Download the free app today. Listen anytime, anywhere, now, even without Wi-Fi or a cell connection. Stitcher is an award-winning free mobile app that lets you listen to all your favorite shows, like this one, plus discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Listen to whatever you want, whenever you want, with one free app. Tens of thousands of shows, like this one, and stations to discover. Get customized recommendations. Get the latest episodes faster on Stitcher, where the latest shows continuously update. Connect with your Facebook account and comment on our episodes. How cool is that? We love to see what you have to say. With Stitcher, there's no downloading, no syncing, and no wasting memory. TechCrunch named Stitcher one of the 20 best iOS and Android apps of 2012. Available for iPhone, Android, and most tablets on demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it free today at Stitcher.com or in your favorite app store. All right.
right, let me tell you about episode 5. I don't remember having this much fun. There were a bunch of moments where we just started falling all over ourselves laughing, like this. That's Jen. Let's hear that again. One more time. Wouldn't that make a great ringtone? Okay, no disrespect meant to Ms. Bjorklund, because I hold her in very high regard as a professional journalist and just an all-around great person. But she lost it when Carlo started talking about a pretty serious hockey injury to a guy I happen to know. Listen to this and pay extra careful attention so you don't miss the dreaded snort.
Controversy already surrounding fighting in hockey.
Uh-oh.
Yeah,
part of the game, though, right?
We saw this in the first game of the season between the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs. George Parros, former Anaheim Duck.
Buddy of mine.
Oh, name dropper.
Yeah.
Got into a fight with Colton Orr, their second fight of the night. Parros fell face first on the ice, knocking himself out cold.
Oh, no. And he's a tall guy, too.
Big guy.
So that's Tim Burr.
It's kind of embarrassing, isn't it?
Right?
Just knocked himself out?
Well,
first day on the new skates.
You're a professional.
Come on.
He was in a fight. Sometimes you lose control. And Parros is known for his stash. Unfortunately, that stash
his
could
mustache,
not.
His mustache, yes. Mustache, Jay. Don't get the wrong idea.
My bad.
All right.
Yeah, unfortunately, he couldn't cushion the fall, but the stretcher did come out.
Who was that?
Out.
Who snorted? I got to call you out.
Jen? That was me.
Her face is red. I love it.
I can't stop laughing.
I love it. She's like, I'm so funny.
I'm dying. He knocked himself out.
Well, I mean, if you see the video, it actually is pretty
serious. You know, he doesn't
serious.
Live far from yeah. here. If he's laid up, if he's laid up for the season, I've got a reason to bring him into the studio.
Absolutely.
Oh, I will hide under this table.
Well, unlike
that
us.
Was not me laughing at you, mister. You're very large and tall.
Don't tell Jen, but I've already confirmed that George will be on the podcast sometime in the near future. I'm sure he'll be a good sport because he's very large and tall. Oh, wait a second. There was a follow-up on that hockey conversation you have to hear, which was prompted by this question from Jay.
Yeah. Now, is there truth? Okay, now, because I've heard this rumor. Is there truth that when they play in Canada, they actually can get away with more fighting than when they play here in the United States?
Well, I don't know if that's the case, but here's the thing. The rules are different. I mean, if you think back to the time when Marty McSorley, who used to play for the Kings,
right.
took a stick to the head of,
right,
a,
right.
of one of the players there, and it was in Canada, the player didn't press charges. But the state can actually press charges, and in fact, they did. And McSorley, I don't know, recall if he was found guilty and spent some time in jail.
I remember he went to jail.
But he did go to jail. So he couldn't leave Canada for a while because he assaulted a guy with a stick on the ice.
Wow.
Which you're not allowed to do. And that hardly ever happens.
Right.
But he lost, it was just a moment where he lost his clarity, and he swung at the guy with his stick, and he spent time in jail.
Wow. I didn't know that. Okay.
So I guess the answer to that question would be no.
Now, if he did that in Los Angeles, he'd get a reality show.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and probably a couple of dates with a Kardashian.
I was going to say, and a Kardashian.
High sticking with Marty McSorley.
He's playing hockey. It's a stick.
I call that West LA voice, and it's so annoying.
Place that's
for
cool.
Place
for
the Kings.
Like,
that's my boyfriend.
Gotta be on.
Ice
girl
cool.
for the Kings.
Shoot them all.
I'm sorry. That was unavoidable. Those Kardashians worm their way into every show, right? Speaking of reality, up next, a couple of ladies from the new TLC reality show, Alaskan Women Looking for Love. Tina and Sabina joined us, and this was a couple days before the debut of their series, and they explained to us the premise of the show. Here's Sabina.
We're tired of dating in Alaska. We haven't had much luck. And
really? Surprise, surprise. In Alaska?
But the ratio is so good.
That's surprising. I know that there are a lot of men here, but the thing is, like they say, you know, the goods are odd, essentially.
The odds are good, but the goods are odd.
Exactly, yeah. And so we decided, why not, you know, go somewhere completely different and try it out and see maybe we'll have some better luck somewhere else.
So let me get this straight. You're in Alaska, everyone who's around you, you've either probably dated them, your friends dated them, or they're your cousin, right?
Right.
So right, you have to get out of there and meet a whole new field of men in a totally different environment than what you're used to. But how hard is that going to be in Miami Beach? I mean, that's one extreme.
That's like putting the alligators in with the tigers.
Right?
Wait, I'm like flipping through. I have a confession. I'm flipping through some of the Google images here.
Okay.
I got a... well, never mind. I'll let you guys go ahead and talk.
He's enjoying looking at the images
hot
of
damn,
yeah, at the end of the series. If
he's
things don't
a
work
hard
out,
time
you
believing,
know, Jay's going to be here for you.
Well, I'm just saying, like, how do you guys actually have a hard time? I mean, you guys come down here. Look, I live in Southern California on the shores down here. And you guys come hang out with us, you're going to have a new problem.
Sell it, Jay.
Yeah, but I'm not trying to sell it, but I'm just saying, like, that's a much different vibe than Miami. Miami is just like, I don't know, it seems a little dirty to me.
Well, you know, just like the guys here in Alaska, we're kind of rough and tough ourselves, you know, because you kind of have to be to live up here. So
right,
it's much harder than you'd think, you know, I mean... When we get down to Miami and we're opening the beer bottles for the boys with the lighter.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like, every woman wants a man, a man's man. Not this Miami, you know, I got to go spend, you know, the next half hour tanning type of guy.
The thing is, I will tell you that it can, yes, every woman likes a man's man. But the problem is it can just get very... primitive at times. I mean, with lots of testosterone around, they can get very territorial to the point where it's not even attractive, really.
You mean they're like pissing on fences? That sort of.
It's 2014. Can we? 13. I'm sorry. Can we not act like cavemen? You know what I mean?
Well, what? Well, you know what? You
got. I have faith that there is, that Alaska isn't the only state in the United States that holds a man's man. I mean, come on, there's got to be some manly men out there.
Because they're right here in the studio.
Yes. I do think there are, yes, but there I don't are. Know. I think Miami Beach is like one extreme to the other.
Right.
You know, did you find that you were meeting, you're going to, like, in Miami Beach, is it going to be like men who spend more time in front of the mirror than you guys do?
That's what
or
I'm saying,
what?
Jen,
I mean,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I was hoping to learn something from them.
Like how to curl your
grooming,
hair?
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Grooming tips.
Hey, maybe get waxed.
Yeah, right.
Hey, let's talk a little bit about how stark a difference this is. Because you guys, you both come up in where? Kodiak, Alaska? Is that where your family is or your work and your house and that sort of thing? Is that an island?
Yeah, it's an island. For me, my job... I'm a welder in the pile drivers union. And so
Awesome.
I travel all over the state. So I'm kind of just from the whole state of Alaska.
I would date you.
See, in Miami, pile drivers is the name of a bar.
Yeah, right? And I don't think it's one of those bars
allowed.
I would ever frequent, ever.
No ladies in there. So what's the typical date in Kodiak, Alaska? When you're meeting up with a guy, what's the typical date?
Let's go fishing.
Oh, God. Make out in the truck.
Yes.
Oh. Right, Sabina, what do we got? You know, go fishing.
Well, you got to stay warm, so I'm sure there's, well.
Want to come up and look at my pelts?
Yeah. Hey, so how many outhouses have you guys used in Alaska? Because I always see that on all those stupid Alaskan shows on, like, Discovery or whatever. Every house has got, like, an outhouse. Is that the way it is in Kodiak? I've never been.
Like an
outhouse. Oh. Yeah, they actually do that out there. Jen, can you imagine that?
But it's so cold in Alaska.
She's trying to talk.
Okay,
Jay.
We're listening. Sorry. We're listening. Answer the question.
That's exactly why they're leaving Kodiak. It's because of guys like you.
Sorry, my bad.
Well, it's hard to keep the ice cubes on the igloo, you know, together all the time. So yeah, we bust out the outhouses quite often around.
So to speak.
She's busting your chops.
What does she mean by that anyway? Well, Alaskan Women Looking for Love airs Sunday nights on TLC. Now, here was a gem. Inventor Aaron Foss came up with a way to block robocalls once and for all. Here he is explaining how Nomo Robo works.
Yeah, it's really pretty simple. You put a number on your phone and all of a sudden my server will answer all the robocalls for you. It'll still let, you know, if your mom calls or your grandmother, those calls get through no problem, but the robocallers are stopped.
What if my mom calls with a robocall? Or I'm thinking of things, people that you do know that call, like your doctor's office, that call to confirm an appointment or something. I've been getting robocalls sure. from my dentist and my doctor.
Yeah, me too.
Would it block those?
No, it's only these illegal robocalls. So also like school closings or, tornado warnings, they are all allowed through. It's just these illegal ones that, you know, the guys that are calling 14 times a day to try and sell you credit card offers and mortgage reduction scams.
Yeah, how does it know the difference?
Sure. So there's actually there's a blacklist of people that have reported all these numbers. There's an algorithm that goes and looks through it and can detect that. And there's also a whitelist of the numbers that it's supposed to allow through. And that's pretty much how the system works.
You said at the beginning, my server. So what mm-hmm. What kind of a contract are we entering into here?
Yeah, sure. So that's actually a big question. Everybody's saying, what about the privacy concerns and things? Because, you know, it does. It has to look at your phone, you know, your incoming call records. There's a full privacy policy. You know, I've worked on it with the legal team. And if those are the
NSA.
Objections.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I can't tell you how many people have actually sent me something like that. Like, this is going to make it easier for the government to spy. I said, I don't know. They're already doing it. So I don't know what to tell you.
Does this work with all carriers?
So in theory, it can. Right now, it seems like the big carriers don't want to play along. They don't seem to want to stop the robocall problem. So it works with five carriers right now, and I'm adding new ones as I get meetings with them.
Which are the five? Do you know?
Sure. It's Verizon Fios. It's Vonage, AT&T, U-verse, ShoreWest, and Optimum Cable Vision.
So these are telephones. These are landlines, right? Does this work for cell phones?
So right now it's all voice over IP. In theory, it can work on traditional landlines and cell phones. Oh, I just have to work with the carriers to try and make that work.
All right. So
it's on their end.
So do the consumers work with you with the carriers? Like back in the old cable TV days, I want my MTV, you know, call up your cable people. Do you call up your carrier, your telco, and say, hey, I want this? And if so, what do you tell them they need to do?
Yeah, that's exactly what I've been doing. So, when you go to nomorobo.com and you click on Get Started, it asks for your carriers. And if they're not supported, I show the customer service number and say, hey, give them a call, you know, harass them. And apparently yesterday, I went live on Tuesday, and it has been nonstop flooding of everybody saying that they're calling and, just kind of going through that process.
Oh, good.
That's really good.
I imagine the telcos that don't want to do this see a downside to losing the business of the robocallers.
Yeah.
Is that accurate?
That's what I think. I mean, again, I don't really know, but I think at some point when all of their customers are saying, hey, listen, we're going to switch carriers, or why don't you support this? You know, there's a solution for this. They're going to have to act, and that's kind of what I'm hoping for.
It's gotten to be a much bigger problem, because I remember when robocalls used to be just, political candidates calling to leave you a message or whatever. But now it seems like I get these phone calls, and I don't put my number out anywhere, but I get these phone calls from numbers that I don't recognize the area code, and then I'll Google that number and I'll see that a bunch of people have said, yeah, this is, you know, this guy selling magazines or whatever. And it just seems like a Herculean task to keep track of all of those numbers. How do you do it?
Sure. So you're exactly right. So the old time robocallers, and the ones that, you know, you've probably heard of the do not call list, and everybody says, I'm on the do not call list, but right. I keep on getting these calls. That do not call list was set up for, you know, exactly like American Express or Chase for doing, you know, telemarketing campaigns. And they play by the rules. If you're on that list, they don't call you. But recently, there's a new brand of these robocallers, and they're just like email spammers. They'll just call numbers sequentially. So they'll go, you know, 000-0001, 0002, 0003, and just play a message hoping that somebody will, you know, fall for their scam. And until now, there hasn't been a solution for that, you know, until Nomo Robo has come along. And so the database that I have right now is actually over 1.2 million known robocallers.
Oh,
so it's
wow.
like having a blacklist.
That's huge.
Yeah. That is
over
huge.
1.2 million. And yeah, and it's missing some of them. I've been getting reports even just today. There must have been 40 or 50 numbers that people reported saying, hey, these guys are robocallers also. So I have to kind of keep on, you know, one step ahead of these guys.
You know, we mentioned the political calls as the robocalls. Mm-hmm. This, I gather you're probably not going to block them, because if the notion up on Capitol Hill is that in some way your company is thwarting the political process, then you better believe a bill is headed your way.
Yeah. I honestly don't know how to handle that right now. So I'm not even touching that.
Baby steps.
I'm just blocking the illegal robocallers. I mean, technically, you know, it's this freedom of speech, and the politicians made a little carve out for, you know, in the law so that they can do that. And same thing with charities. But you know what? You know, you have every right to go and not answer that phone or to block them on your phone. I just haven't figured out the best way to handle that. So, you know, keep posted in a couple of weeks. Maybe I'll figure out some way.
Well, you have it right there. It's like free speech goes both ways. They have the right to call you, and you have the right not to answer. Absolutely. You're paying the bill on your phone, so it's yours.
Speaking of paying the bills, though, and again, we're talking to Aaron Foss, inventor, and we're going to find out some of the other things he's invented in a moment. Right now, we're talking about Nomo Robo, but people get calls from bill collectors, and they call kind of like robocallers. Do you think you're getting in the way in some cases of people who are just, you know, skipping out on paying their responsibilities,
and
the bill collectors who are trying to get that money from the people who provided the services?
5 a.m. Christmas morning.
Does that happen? Do you think you're going to run into that as an issue? Will that become a problem for your business?
Yeah, you know, I same deal. Like, you know, it's all these things. I never thought of these things. I don't have bill collectors calling me, so I had somebody ask if it's going to block calls from jail. I don't know. I've never had anybody call me from jail.
Oh yeah, because it is. You get a recorded message in the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah, this is why you have. This is why you come on Phil Hewlett and Friends, so we can hash.
So we can vet some of these things.
Yeah, we should have QA'd this for you.
Yeah, you know, we can focus group it.
We should have been your research and development team right here.
He gets the calls from jail. I get the bill collectors. I mean, we could all sign up for your service. And
that was one time, and I shared that story in confidence.
All right.
Hey, and I'll tell you this much too. The number, it was like, will it block like my crazy ex-girlfriend from calling me? I'm like, no, that one I know I can't do.
But that's another business model that you
should
perhaps.
Yeah, that's the next app for my phone.
So is this catching on? I mean, how big has this gotten in the short period of time that you've been live?
Okay, so I figured that like a few hundred people would sign up, maybe a few thousand people. I mean, as of right now, over 166,000 people have signed up in 2 days.
Wow.
You just launched in two days?
2 days, huh? Wow.
It's ridiculous.
You must be rich.
See, this is the other part. I'm giving it away for free.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
You really should have had us on board with this in the beginning.
Yeah, you should be charging $20 a pop.
There you go.
Yeah, but there's a data trail, though, right? I mean, people sign up. They're giving you an email address or something like that. There's got to be an upside for you. You're not just doing this for nothing, right? I mean, free on the internet means that people give you their data.
Yeah, version 2.0 means $50 ahead. That's what it means, right?
Yeah. No, not quite. But basically what it is, you know, listen, that for regular consumers, robocalls are annoying. And, you know, we have to get up out of our sofa and go and answer when we're watching TV.
Right.
But for business, you know, businesses with large call centers or the EMS system, 911, I mean, because these robocallers are calling sequentially, they're actually winding up clogging the 911 line. So they've been looking for a solution to this problem, and they want to buy the data. Exactly. So the consumers are getting the robocall blocking for free while helping generate this real-time blacklist that I'm then going to be selling to the businesses. So it really works out for everybody.
So you said that your server answers the robocall, right? So robocall comes in, your server picks it up. Can I leave a personalized message on your server so when they call my number, I can literally let them have it?
That's
now,
in the
that would be
that's
fun.
In the premium package,
right?
That's exactly what I'm thinking. Yeah, as far as premium services, like a little button that says, right, like screw with the robocallers, like that.
Yeah, that would be
people
something.
Want to pay for. Again, I've kind of like pushed those into the future right now. My whole goal, so, and again, I don't know if you guys talked about that FTC competition that I won. But that I was I, that was
no. Tell us about
in,
that. Tell us about
oh,
the FTC.
Sure. So,
yeah, what
FTC
is that
competition?
So the FTC. So robocalls are the number one problem that the FTC gets a report on. They have over 200,000 complaints every single month. There's millions of these calls that there are millions of these complaints. So they
and I've made
back
them.
In, yeah, exactly. I think we all have. Back last October, they ran this competition and they said, who out there can solve this problem? And they put up a $50,000 prize. And I like money a lot and I like programming. And I figured, hey, I can kind of do both of these. And so back on April 1st, they announced that I was the winner. I was down at a press conference in D.C.
Wow.
So basically
cool.
the last six Yeah, the 6 months almost to the day. I mean, I'm looking at the certificate right now. The April 2nd is when I won the competition. 6 months I basically spent taking my idea and building it out over the summer. And my whole thing was, let me get it into the hands of consumers and start blocking all of these robocallers as soon as I can. And then I'll figure out all those, you know, the premium services and the calls from jail and all that stuff I'll get later. Just let's start blocking robocalls for people.
And nobody knows where you live, right?
Nobody knows this phone number, right?
That's it for the Best Of edition of Phil Hewlett and Friends. A brand new episode next week, I promise. Thanks for subscribing to the RSS feed either on our website or on your favorite podcast aggregator, you know, like iTunes. We're everywhere. Thanks for taking the audience survey on our website. Look for the button on the homepage. Mike Stark is our executive producer. Our theme song is composed and performed by Russ Monson. Our intern is Michael Foss. On behalf of Jennifer Bjorklund, Jay Campadonia, and Carlos Sisu, until next week, so long from San Pedro, California, and thanks for listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends.